In 2020, as a novel coronavirus burned through the world's population, killing up to 3 million people worldwide during that first year, the United States was focused on developing a vaccine.
Today, I want to update you on the next stage of this momentous medical initiative. It's called Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast. A massive scientific and
under Operation Warp Speed, my administration is developing a vaccine in record time. It will be distributed before the end of the year and maybe quite a bit sooner than that.
I have really good news. Today, our nation has achieved a medical miracle. We have delivered a safe and effective vaccine in just 9 months. This is one of the greatest scientific accomplishments in history.
That was President Trump in 2020 celebrating what he and many others called one of the greatest achievements in American history, the rapid development of mRNA vaccines for COVID-19. Operation Warp Speed delivered. The vaccines worked. They saved millions of lives. But in certain corners of the internet, a chorus of conspiracies was beginning to build. There was mounting suspicion of the vaccine and the technology that made it possible. Some thought it caused health complications that were worse than those caused by the COVID virus itself. Others had stranger ideas.
People who've had these shots and now they're magnetized. They can put a key on their forehead, it sticks. They can put spoons and forks all over them and they can stick because now we think that there's a metal piece to that.
Suspicion has grown in these groups in the 6 years since, often supported by the fact that both the COVID virus and mRNA vaccines are new to us. And sometimes what scientists expect to happen and what actually happens are different, so science adjusts. Scientists are used to that. That's how science works. Regular folks, though, that can make some people nervous. There is also a pretty well-established, at this point, movement of people in the U.S. who aren't convinced that vaccines are good for people at all. And in 2025, one of their leaders took questions about it.
Was the vaccine, COVID vaccine, successful in saving millions of lives?
I don't know. We don't have a good surveillance system, unfortunately.
We don't know?
I don't think anybody can say that.
That's Robert Kennedy Jr. at his confirmation hearing to become Secretary of Health and Human Services, being questioned by Senator Bernie Sanders.
If you show me science, it says
but
that.
You know, Bob, you say if I show you, you're applying for the job. I mean, clearly, you should know this. And that is, the scientific community has established that, that COVID vaccines save millions of lives, and you're casting doubt.
Despite this and a few other tussles, Kennedy was confirmed. And in the year since he took over the department, which oversees the Food and Drug Administration, the CDC, and the National Institutes of Health, federal support for research into vaccines using mRNA technology has dissolved.
Over the past few weeks, BARDA reviewed 22 mRNA vaccine development investments and began canceling them. Let me explain why. Most of these shots are for flu or COVID, but as the pandemic showed us, mRNA vaccines don't perform well against viruses that infect the upper respiratory tract.
Kennedy canceled $500 million in mRNA research funding. Then, in February of this year, the FDA shocked the biotech industry by refusing to even look at Moderna's application to market the first mRNA flu shot. Here's Moderna President Stephen Hoge on news channel MS Now.
We're pretty confused, and so we're still trying to understand and we're seeking guidance, more guidance from the FDA.
But wait, then, just 1 week later, the FDA reversed course again. It announced it would look at Moderna's application. The same technology President Trump called a miracle and that offers hope against deadly diseases like pancreatic cancer, melanoma, multiple sclerosis, cystic fibrosis, is now caught up in a sort of regulatory whipsaw. And that creates uncertainty everywhere, which can have a chilling effect on innovation. So, what exactly is this technology that's causing so much consternation and controversy? Where did it come from? How long has it been around? And what might we be risking, not just in vaccine development, but in basic science and rare disease research, when the regulatory ground keeps shifting beneath researchers' feet? From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
From the Canadian Broadcasting Center, here.
In March of 2003.
Ontario is in the grips of a health emergency. Thousands of Toronto residents have been asked to quarantine themselves by staying home and wearing masks.
Sound familiar? A virus, a coronavirus, had forced Canada's largest city into lockdown.
The drastic step is because of a deadly SARS outbreak and the concern that it could be spreading.
SARS-CoV-1 is a cousin of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. Now, we'd known coronaviruses could cause the common cold since the 1960s, but they'd never been known to kill humans. They'd never caused anything like severe acute respiratory syndrome, the killer in Toronto, and why the virus became known as SARS.
It took a few months to figure out what's causing all these people to get sick in the world.
Dr. Larry Schlesinger is the president and CEO of Texas Biomedical Research Institute. He's a scientist, a medical doctor, and a professor at Texas Biomed. He says when scientists realize that coronaviruses, like flu viruses, have the capacity to take humans by surprise and kill in large numbers, they began to prepare for the next outbreak by learning everything they could about this new threat.
Because of that science, we were able to really learn about these so-called coronaviruses and what was it about the virus that caused problems and what would be the molecule that a vaccine would have to target to get protection. So we learned about the spike protein long before the pandemic.
During the same time, scientists were also learning about mRNA technology.
That is correct. And one of the misnomers today is that mRNA is brand new technology. As you just suggested, scientists began to think about this messenger RNA in the 70s and 80s as a way to maybe make a therapy or a vaccine because it would be very flexible to make. And it would be quick and adaptable.
Early experiments didn't work, but by 2005, scientists at the University of Pennsylvania figured out how to make it safe and effective and won the Nobel Prize for it. So what is mRNA exactly?
You know, in each one of our cells in our body, we have what's called DNA. Most people know DNA. And that's the foundation, if you will, right? The building block. But DNA then instructs the production of something called messenger RNA. So messenger RNA is kind of like the molecular recipe or instructor that then goes on to make proteins.
Dr. Hae-Young Lee is an associate professor at UT Health San Antonio. She studies neurodevelopmental disorders and is researching potential treatments for a type of autism that would use mRNA technology. She explains it this way.
Messenger RNA messengers the DNA to the protein. So it delivers a message from the DNA to the protein.
Inside almost every cell in your body, you've got DNA and mRNA working together. Your DNA holds the instructions that make you, you. They're unique. But DNA can't leave the nucleus of the cell. So think of it like a master cookbook that never leaves the library. So that's where mRNA comes in. It's the messenger. When the cell needs a specific protein, mRNA makes a photocopy of that recipe from the DNA and carries it to the protein-making machinery of the cell. Now, traditional vaccines introduce a small amount of an actual pathogen into your body, like a piece of the flu virus or a little piece of the COVID virus, to trigger your immune system. mRNA vaccines work differently. mRNA vaccines deliver temporary instructions that teach your cells how to make a harmless piece of a virus itself, just enough for your immune system to recognize it and prepare a defense.
By injecting this messenger RNA in our cells in our body and producing this molecule that originally would be produced by a virus, let's say, we can, in a healthy person, create a more aggressive and proper immune response. So it's fooling us. It's fooling us to think we had the infection, and that's making us prepared.
And then the mRNA just breaks down and disappears.
They only make the protein for a very short period of time to boost the immune system, and then they're gone. They're degraded. They don't just hang out in the body. They're degraded by our own body's enzymes, the scissors that cut up the messenger RNA.
This is important because, remember, there are some interesting ideas out there about mRNA technology.
There's been people who've long suspected that there was some sort of an interface, yet to be defined, an interface between what's being injected in these shots and all of the 5G towers.
One of the most persistent myths about mRNA vaccines is that they somehow change your DNA. They don't.
There is no evidence, none, that mRNA vaccines can affect your genome, your DNA. In fact, they operate in very different places in the cell, the nucleus of a cell where DNA is, and these mRNA technologies work in the outside the nucleus.
mRNA never even enters the part of the cell where DNA lives. It never goes into that metaphorical library in a cell's nucleus where the master cookbook is kept. mRNA is forced to read those recipes through a window. It copies them through that window and delivers them to the protein-making machinery, which made it an enticing option when a new coronavirus emerged, one that was enough like SARS-1 to make the nearly two decades of research on that virus exceedingly valuable, and Operation Warp Speed offered previously unimaginable access to resources to develop a vaccine.
We'd love to see if we could do it prior to the end of the year. We think we're going to have some very good results coming out very quickly.
So we knew a lot about the virus, right? That was helpful. And then we've already discussed how the messenger RNA platform was already in development. So we had the platform to make a vaccine that was ready to go. And so when people started getting sick, we were able, within a week or two, to sequence this unknown virus and immediately know it was a coronavirus. We got very lucky. It wasn't a virus that was unfamiliar to us. And we knew the spike protein was going to be key.
In San Antonio, the Texas Biomedical Research Institute was all hands on deck.
I pulled all the scientists together in a room, and we already at Texas Biomed knew how to make animal models of human disease really well. I mean, we knew how to do that super well, and we decided within one meeting that was what was needed here.
Texas Biomed conducted the animal studies the FDA required before the Pfizer mRNA vaccines could be tested in humans. And in December 2020,
I am thrilled to report that the FDA has authorized the Pfizer vaccine. These vaccines are also very safe. American citizens participated in clinical trials that were far larger than normal and had no serious side effects.
The vaccines worked, and they began going into arms before the end of 2020. The mRNA vaccines proved remarkably safe, too, though some rare but serious side effects were identified after millions of doses, including cases of myocarditis, primarily in young men. But since then, more than 13 billion vaccine doses using mRNA technology have been administered around the world.
because of the COVID-19 vaccine, how much it has been used worldwide. It has tons of data right now. That's a really big advantage.
Researchers in other fields, like Heyoung Lee at UT Health San Antonio, were paying close attention.
We want to understand how mRNA going to our system can affect our body. So we have a lot of data. So that's a big advantage.
COVID vaccines generated an enormous amount of safety and efficacy information, more than any vaccine in history. President Trump cites Operation Warp Speed as one of his signature achievements.
You know, Operation Warp Speed was, just according to just about everybody, was one of the greatest things that any president has ever done in this country. So we're very proud of it. I'm very proud of it.
Which makes what's been happening in 2025 and 2026 particularly striking. Let's start with flu season. It's been brutal this year. The Centers for Disease Control says a variant called subclade K has driven more than 24 million cases in the U.S. and killed at least 20,000 people. The dead include, at the time of this recording, 71 children. One of the reasons this flu season has been so rough is that the version of influenza A that's circulating this year mutated after the vaccines had been developed. So there's a mismatch between the vaccine and the virus. And you can't just fix that, right? The flu vaccines we use now are grown in eggs, which takes about 6 months from start to finish. That means scientists have to guess in February which strains will be circulating the following fall and winter. If they guess wrong, or if the virus mutates in between, there's just no time to adapt. mRNA vaccines are more flexible.
They can be done very quickly, and that makes it particularly potent.
But the FDA nearly derailed the forward progress of Moderna's mRNA flu vaccine, and HHS Secretary Kennedy has just pulled $500 million in mRNA vaccine development funding. This has a chilling effect on research using a technology that has potential far beyond vaccines against viruses. Scientists are working on mRNA vaccines against cancer, too.
It started with skin cancer, untreatable types of skin cancer like melanoma, but also now there's research going on with prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, breast cancer, all now looking at how we can boost the immune system and create these missile molecules that can fight the cancer cells for these various tumors. We've made major breakthrough in cancer therapy. Immunotherapy has clearly been a breakthrough, but there's still some of these really common cancers that we're having a lot of trouble treating. Messenger RNA could be an answer, creating kind of a vaccine to fight the cancer. Also, there's work going on to treat what is called autoimmune disease. This is where our own body's immune system fights ourselves, which can happen. And now we can use messenger RNA to create an immune response to protect us against those autoimmune processes. Multiple sclerosis, people are looking at that. So the platform becomes quite broad, both therapeutically and from a vaccine standpoint.
And then there's the potential for mRNA technology to facilitate treatments for previously untreatable diseases, including one that's linked to one of the president's priorities.
I think we're going to have something very, very big coming up soon on autism. Autism is totally out of control.
When Petri Dish continues, we'll talk to a San Antonio researcher who's exploring treatments for Fragile X, the most common single gene cause of autism, using mRNA technology.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio's Mays Cancer Center, South Texas NCI-designated cancer center, providing cancer care for patients, advancing research, and educating the next generation of leaders. Mays Cancer Center is working to end cancer in South Texas and beyond. Learn more at mayscancercenter.org.
Hey, Petri Dish listeners, we're working on a show about loneliness, and we want to hear from you. Are you lonely? Have you been lonely? What was it like for you? reach out to us at petridish@tpr.org. That's petridish, P-E-T-R-I-E, dish at tpr.org or bonnie@tpr.org if you'd like to share your story with us. Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri. Dr. Hae-Young Lee runs a lab at UT Health San Antonio. She's a neuroscientist, and her work has nothing to do with vaccines. Lee's lab is focused on Fragile X syndrome.
Fragile X syndrome is the most common monogenic cause for autism, and about 25% to 30% of the patients shows autistic feature of it. When we say autistic feature, is a repetitive behavior and also social deficits.
Fragile X affects about 1 in 4,000 boys and 1 in 8,000 girls, and it has no treatment.
Just like other autism, it's very, very difficult to treat because most of the neurodevelopmental disorders, including autism and the Fragile X syndrome, are genetic. And most of them are caused by the mutations.
The mutations in Fragile X begin with DNA, our master cookbook, the one we can't take out of the library. Now, all the recipes in the book are written in a four-letter alphabet. The letters are A, T, C, and G. But sometimes those letters can get jumbled, and sometimes they can get sort of stuck on repeats, sort of like when your cat decides to sit on your computer keyboard. Now, there's a spot on a certain gene called FMR1 where the letters C, G, and G repeat over and over, and that's normal. These letters repeat up to 40 times in most people. Then the cat gets off the keyboard. But in Fragile X, the cat stretches out and makes itself comfortable, and the CGG repeats hundreds of times. Now, the cook tries to make the proteins, but they can't keep up. There are too many CGGs over and over and over and over again, so the cook just throws up their hands and stops. They stop making a protein the brain desperately needs, called FMRP, and that can cause symptoms of autism.
So the first symptom is intellectual disability. 100% of the patient shows intellectual disability. Some of the patient also shows anxiety and hyperactivity.
Science is not yet in a place where it can restore FMRP protein in people with Fragile X. But what about the next best thing? So there's a receptor that goes a little bit haywire in the absence of the FMRP protein called mGlur5. Frenzied mGlur5 signaling appears to be linked with behaviors that are associated with autism. So if you can't create FMRP, maybe you could reduce mGlur5 activity some other way.
So the idea is, why don't you just kill some of the activity of mGlur5 and that will fix the problem?
All right, but how do you do that? How do you kill that activity? Well, maybe with a gene editing tool called CRISPR, which is essentially molecular scissors that can make precise cuts in DNA. Now, if Lee could make cuts in the mGlur5 gene, it might slow down, just sort of calm down the frenzy in mGlur5, and those symptoms associated with autism might ease. Now, how do you get the CRISPR into the cells to make the scissor proteins? Well, there are a couple of ways. You could do it with an actual virus, but right now, the most promising way is mRNA.
We wanted to avoid using virus because a virus has a toxicity.
Lee's lab is using mRNA to deliver CRISPR instructions to cells in the brains of mice by slipping the mRNA into lipid nanoparticles, so the same tiny fatty bubbles used to deliver COVID vaccines. Once they're in the cell, instead of making a spike protein, it makes the cutting protein, the molecular scissors.
And then we basically cut mGlur5 down to the normal range.
Previous research showed that if you could dial mGlur5 back down to normal levels, brain function might improve. Back in 2018, Lee's team proved that concept in Fragile X mice. Using a different delivery method, they successfully edited the MGLR5 gene, and the repetitive behaviors in the mice stopped. Lee calls that rescuing behaviors, which simply means restoring normal behavior.
We are the only lab that who published a rescue of the behavior with the non-viral vectors.
Now her lab is working to see if mRNA-based delivery can achieve the same results, but not only with repetitive behaviors, but cognitive deficits too, including problems with learning and memory. Now, this is real progress that provides real hope.
In my laboratory, I'm actually seeing a huge hope because we started actually seeing a Fragile X syndrome rescuing the behavior with a non-viral vector for the first time in the world, actually. We have so much hope.
Which makes the fact that Kennedy seems to be targeting mRNA technology especially disconcerting.
To replace the troubled mRNA programs, we're prioritizing the development of safer, broader vaccine strategies.
To be clear, so far, Kennedy's HHS has defunded vaccine research, not mRNA research, not research on potential therapeutics or rare disease cures using mRNA. But the answer to improving a technology like mRNA is not shutting down research. At least, that's what Dr. Schlesinger thinks.
Science is about creating new things, new ideas in the laboratory. And those ideas sometimes move in directions you can't predict. So you really need the science of messenger RNA to continue to evolve in laboratories to see if you can constantly improve how it works. How about we continue to try to improve the messenger RNA, doing the fundamental science that will lead to scientific breakthroughs?
All this chaotic activity in Washington around mRNA tech has broader implications, too.
It does create an unstable regulatory environment for the production. Now, despite that, others continue to go full force. So international competitors, the private sector, pharma, there continues to be a lot of excitement and continued work developing therapies and vaccines.
And the most interesting thing, at least to me, is that the uncertainty created by all these HHS course changes isn't only being felt in research institutions and labs across the country. It's being felt in the Oval Office, too.
You were the driving force behind Operation Warp Speed, these mRNA vaccines that are the gold standard.
Right.
Now your health secretary is pulling back all the funding for research. He's saying that the risks outweigh the benefits, which puts him at odds with
research
the entire medical community and with you. What is going on?
Research on what?
Into mRNA vaccines.
Well, we're going to look at that. We're talking about it, and they're doing a very good job.
That was August, 7 months into President Trump's second term in office, 5 years after he launched Operation Warp Speed and launched mRNA technology into the spotlight. And here's Trump again in September of last year.
So I don't know exactly what the final determination is, but I had the vaccine. I was very happy with it. Here I am. Right? Here I am.
Meanwhile, families affected by diseases without treatment, like Fragile X, are still waiting.
Whenever I go to the conference, you know, they always ask, oh, when can we start seeing some treatments? When can we actually start using your treatments? So I tell them we don't have ETA, but we are definitely on the way.
Dr. Schlesinger is hopeful too, even though it's become impossible to predict what tomorrow may hold.
I think that particularly because I focus on next generation scientists who are hurting right now, the youth in our laboratories throughout the country are the future Einsteins and Nobel Prize winners. We have to maintain some level of optimism and say that this too shall pass. But it is difficult right now to maintain that optimism. I'm honest about that, but we have to keep going.
Thank you, Drs. Larry Schlesinger and Hyung Lee, for walking this humble reporter through such complicated subject matter so our listeners and I can better understand what's at stake here. I appreciate it so much. This This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TBR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. I researched, reported, and wrote the show. Jacob composed all the music, created the sound design, and edited the script. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petrie. Talk to you soon.